So my name is Lauren. I am just involved in the Arboretum Here project. And we're just looking to collect some oral history stories. So if you want to introduce yourself.
My name is Kale Wishart, and I'm the head gardener here at the Guelph Arboretum.
Perfect. If you want to describe what you're looking at right now.
So yeah, right now we're in the Gosling Wildlife Gardens in Garden 1, which is the pollinator garden. Lots of very sort of informal mass flowy beds, different pollinator species of plants. Everything that's planted in here has had some benefit to pollinators. Either if it's through their blooms or their foliage or several other things that support pollinators through their entire life cycle. We also have a newly built pond, which has been a big attraction the last year, and a really important feature for different wildlife species to have that source of water available for them, including insects. So,
All right. Do you have any specific memories that have happened throughout this garden?
This whole area has sort of been my baby the past 3 years since I've started. I would say that I kind of came into this space that was a bit neglected. And so it's sort of been my job to redesign a lot of these beds, some gardens as a whole, and sort of rejuvenate them through different planting designs and different infrastructure updates as well.
And walking into here when you had first started and coming into these gardens, seeing how they were kind of neglected, did that make you feel any kind of way?
Exciting to, I'm always so, like, as a gardener, I'm always so critical of spaces. It's hard for me to, if it's my garden and I walk in, I always see what's wrong with it before I actually enjoy it. So, having that opportunity to be able to redesign this space was exciting when I first walked in here, and, something that,
you cherish. Make it a little more meaningful when you're kind of organizing it.
Yeah.
And how has the location changed since you first started here? Has it been all of the gardens or just...
So when I came in here, we sort of had a priority phasing plan of how we were going to rejuvenate some of these gardens. The garden that we're in right now, the pollinator garden, was number one, mostly because of the pond. When it was put in, I think 20-30 years ago, it did have a bit of neglect, and then ultimately the liner in the bottom had a tear in it, so then the pond couldn't hold any water. So that was a big project to do, and I do have some not so fun memories of cleaning out all the rocks in that, but looking back at it, it was a lot of fun, you know, working with coworkers and having that big project on hand, and then seeing how it is now is really exciting.
So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Even during the research I was doing about the Gosling Gardens, there was a lot of change over time, even since like the 80s. There's been so much change since it first opened, and even like just the evolution of the gardens, all of them within the Gosling Gardens.
Yeah.
And was there ever a time that you remember, I don't know, really spending a lot of time like fixing it up or seeing any big drastic changes if you ever visited the Arboretum before you started working here?
I think a lot of what's been happening because we have to do so much changes is because things grow, right?
Yeah.
So we've when this was first planted, this is all open sun, open fields. So, you know, that influences the types of plants that you can put in here. And so over time, you start to see the trees get bigger and things get shaded, and then that sort of changes the microclimates within the space. So we sort of had to adjust plant lists and figure out what we can grow in here now, because it is a lot different than it was 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. Also, some things that were put in here originally are now considered invasive, or something that you maybe wouldn't want to put in your garden, or maybe wouldn't serve that wildlife purpose. So a big part of my role the last 3 years was having to update all the plant lists for these gardens and sort of go through every plant individually, identify it, see if it's, we want to keep it, if it's being replicated too many times in other gardens, and if there's other species that can replace it and maybe contribute different values to wildlife.
Yeah, I remember about 15 years ago I was reading that all the plants in the gardens became super invasive, so they had to just like absolutely start fresh.
Yeah,
and they burnt like a bunch of the invasive species.
And that's the native plant garden three.
Yeah,
and they tried those burning techniques for a while, and it just became too much of a maintenance nightmare.
Yeah.
So they ended up redesigning the space, which, thankfully, was good for me.
I have a few more notes here. If I can find them.
I got notes.
Sorry, did I give you one of the wrong papers?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'll just take pictures after. I'm just noting it down as well.
I'm going to need to edit this out.
Okay, that's fine.
I had some questions.
I hope you don't need any more notes right now, anyways.
Maybe I didn't give it to you.
Okay.
So I know that the Gosling Gardens altogether are kind of the primary idea that Philip had was to make them all kind of resemble someone's backyard. That was kind of like the overall goal. Would you say, like, personally, you've maybe taken some inspiration from these gardens and kind of implemented that in your own space?
Yeah, definitely. It's been hard for me because I've moved home several times the last few years. It is kind of a privilege to work in here, and I do treat it as if it was my own garden as well. And I have taken so much inspiration off the design techniques in here and the different plants that are in here, so much so that if anyone asks me, can you plan my garden, like my mom or some of our friends or something, like, I always draw inspiration off these gardens. So it is a useful tool in that sense. And we've also recently updated our signage and labels to help people sort of ID plants and give them tools and resources to help sort of implement those different techniques and plants within their own garden.
Yeah. And do you think just spending, I know you said you spent a lot of time out here, do you think spending all that time around the wildlife that comes in and out of these gardens, do you think your like relationship with wildlife has changed through spending so much time here?
Yeah,
it kind of attracts.
Yeah, it's because before I took landscape architecture as my undergrad, and before I used to work in very formal gardens like English gardens and rose gardens and stuff like that. That, you know, they do have some wildlife benefit in some sense, but a lot of it's catered towards human aesthetics, right? So wildlife doesn't care about like what we perceive as beautiful, though you can make a wildlife garden really beautiful from the human eye, but it has really changed my eye of how to look at a garden space, to see it through maybe different wildlife lenses and how they can use that space and how it supports them. So and it, you know, everything that's going on right now with climate change and habitat loss and stuff like that, it is I think, becoming more important now than ever, that people start using the space that they have on the property to support wildlife in some way, because it is becoming a more finite resource. A lot of habitats being fragmented, and you know, more cities are being built, so whatever way that we can support them, I think is really critical right now. So mm-hmm. that's why it's become sort of really important for me to sort of convey to people that visit here, because it is becoming a really important topic of discussion right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think, since you first started here 3 years ago, would you be able to say that the volume of wildlife that walks through these gardens has reduced at all?
It's hard to tell. It's it definitely see things like the monarch butterfly population less abundant, though I've heard recently that they've grown in numbers, which is a good surprise.
Good.
But yeah, it's it is hard to tell. I've heard from, because I'm not in the gardens like 24/7, but there are some people that visit here that are, and hearing from them, it does seem like there's a bit of a reduction in different wildlife species visiting here, which is sad to see, but that's just, I think, the trend, the way things are going, and we can only do what we can with the space available. And I mean, you still see tons and tons of different animals coming in here every single day, so whatever we can do to support them on this level and in this area is meaningful for me. And then, like I was saying before, if we can convey those features to other people and help them use those techniques in their own garden, mm-hmm. I think that we can start to spread awareness and hopefully build a healthier city.
Perfect. Yeah. Yes. And anything in these gardens, just like, I don't know, maybe when you're working or just kind of walking through, is there anything about the sounds or scents or sights that evoke any kind of particular emotions?
Yeah, I mean, the sound of water is always very soothing and relaxing. I love being out here at 7 in the morning and just listening to the birds chirp and the squirrels yell at each other, and there's so many different interactions that are going on that you see, and even at like a very minimal level, if you just look at like one stem of a plant or something, you can see all the different things that are happening on it. So yeah, it does bring up a lot of emotions, most of which are very calming and relaxing, but also very gratifying to see that you are supporting a range of species outside of just humans.
That's awesome. Okay, I think that's good. Do you have any other experiences here that you feel would be worth sharing?
No, I think that might have covered it.
Perfect.
So you got everything that you need.
Yeah. That's good. Well, thank you very much for participating in the interview. I think that your insights were very helpful. And if you want to listen over to the audio, you can do that as well.
Sure.
Thank you.